You're listening to the DC Real Estate Podcast, the podcast where we focus exclusively on all things local to the DMV area. Local investors, local knowledge, local experts. Our journey starts now.
Welcome to this week's episode of the DC Real Estate Podcast. My name is Russell Brazil. I am an associate broker with Arla at Properties.
And I am Sarah Frank. I am a realtor, also on the District Invest Group with Russell. I am licensed in Maryland and DC, soon to be PA.
So you're a realtor, you're not a realtor?
A realtor.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, you're getting your PA license here very soon.
Yeah, I do need your help because I'm confused at how to do the background check. There's like 10 different ways to do it. And that's the kind of stuff that I shut down on. So
the background check's super easy. I do mine one block away. There's also a place right by your house that you just go, you get fingerprints, they send you the thing.
Not the post office, though.
It's not at the post office.
It's across the city.
That place allows walk-ins, but there's even a closer place, but you got to make an appointment.
Okay.
But I go to the place generally down the street here.
All right. Well, we'll figure it out.
But if you're listening, Pennsylvania offers full reciprocity to Maryland licensees. So if you want to get a Pennsylvania license, all you have to do is a state police background check and a little bit of paperwork.
Some fingerprints. If you can figure. Oh, and a letter of good standing.
Letter of good standing. Or Maryland calls it something different. What do they call it? A certificate of licensure.
Oh, that's why I couldn't find the letter of good standing. See, yeah. That shut me down for like a week. So back on it this week. Anyhow, let's get into the market. Russell, what are you seeing?
Market is freaking hot.
Specifically where?
Pretty much everywhere, right? So like, we're seeing multiple offers in Baltimore. Virginia's the hottest part of the market.
Yes.
Just saw 60 offers in Columbia, Maryland. Like, I've never seen Howard County that hot.
So that, I think, was fishing. I think they priced it like that. They were going for a record.
I don't even know which property it was. I just heard stories of it. Do you know which property it was?
It was a townhome. The one in Gaithersburg?
No. That one, you're right. But that one was like 90 offers, I think.
No. 60.
60. But there was another one in Columbia that was like 60 offers.
Really?
The one in Gaithersburg, like they priced it $100,000, $150,000 below value.
Right. Knowing it would drive this insane traffic.
Yeah.
And what do you do? So as an agent, I talked to one of my clients about this, who wasn't buying down there, he's buying in Baltimore. He's like, would you, you know, if you're pre-approved for 400, say, and you can't find a house like that in the 400 range, but then that pops up. As an agent, knowing, like we knew that's going to, do you take your client you could take them to see it, but writing an offer, there's 60 other offers. I mean,
yeah. So I ran into a situation maybe about 4 weeks before that one where I had this property was in Silver Spring, same sort of deal where it was priced. It was like a $500,000 property, maybe 600, something like that. But they priced it at like 300 to just get a huge amount of offers. So I had like three or four of my clients reach out like, we want to see this. We want to write an offer on it. And so because I had so many clients reach out, I was like, oh, I'm not writing 5, 6, 7 offers on this property because this property is going to get 100 offers or something ridiculous.
It's going to go way over what, yeah.
So I emailed all of my clients that were in it. I was like, look, we've got multiple clients that want to write on this house. You tell me what your highest is and we will only write one offer from our clients that's the highest of this bunch. And I submitted one offer and they still, like that highest offer of our clients wasn't even close.
Middle of the pack, yeah.
Yeah. And so, but it saved my other four or so clients the wasted time of writing an offer because they knew right off the bat, I'm just making up numbers here. If they were willing to go to 500 and we had another client willing to go to 600, then they knew that they didn't have to waste the time writing that offer. So that was a little helpful. But still, the one offer we wrote was a waste of time. So,
right. You
know, listen to your agents when they tell you it's going to be a waste of time writing this. It's always worth sometimes throwing it out there because you never know. But, you know, we know in those 100 offer situations that, you know, it's just a waste of time to write that offer.
Right. And so you're seeing the same, when you say multiple offers, and you're in more in DC than I am, are you seeing that as well in DC?
Yeah. So it's a DC proper is the coldest part of the market. Now, that doesn't mean it's cold,
and
but it's
proper for people listening. What do you consider proper?
DC proper's in the diamond.
In the right? diamond. Okay.
District of Columbia address. Hot properties there are getting 4 or 5 offers.
Okay.
But compare that to Virginia, where hot properties are getting 20 offers.
And by hot proper in DC is that entry home, like your Petworth townhome.
Petworth, Brightwood,
okay.
Fort Totten, Riggs Park. The east side of the river, EOTR, east of the river, generally not, even during the hottest markets, is not going to get 5 offers, unless it's like
a lot of investor activity though.
Yeah. If the property can be flipped, someone will buy over there, but you're not getting 5 people looking to be primary owner occupants competing over a house in Deanwood or Anacostia.
Yeah.
Petworth, Riggs Park, Brightwood, that whole stretch of the city, 16th Street Heights, a little bit of Columbia Heights. That's probably the hottest parts of the city right now.
And how is our old faithful slow-moving condo market doing?
Condo market is crap and has been for years now.
Not even a little bit with prices going up. You don't see anyone choosing the condo lifestyle.
Condos are better than they were a year to a year and a half ago. But that's still not great. But if you are getting beat out in trying to buy a row house or a single family, and you're looking to buy a property that offers more value for the dollar, you're willing to hold that property a little bit longer, right? Because it during the down market, they're not going to appreciate that well. There's good value to be had in condos, but they're not going to appreciate it $30,000 a year right now. They're still going up in value, just not as fast. And it depends on the type of condo too. So if it's got parking and it's got outdoor space and it's a multi-level condo, that's actually going to get multiple offers.
Sure. But then you're at the price point of a row home.
Right. You are. It's the cheaper one bedroom units that live like apartments that are not moving. Mm-hmm. The units that are live like more like homes or single families or row houses, those will move. So your 2 over 2 condos are moving and appreciating. It's just the one bedrooms are. But again, you're having trouble buying a property. There's good value there. You're not going to be competing with people. You can negotiate closing costs. You can oftentimes negotiate the price down. So there's good value there.
Yeah. And what are you seeing? I've been doing less and less Montgomery County, it feels like, because I've been really focused on Baltimore, especially now the Key Bridge traffic pattern is going to be, I'm going to need a helicopter to do stuff in Montgomery County. But what are you seeing the same stuff there for the
Montgomery County is hot. Anything under 2 million is pretty hot. Particularly that 500 to a million range is very hot. If the property is priced appropriately, it's going to get 10 offers at least, sometimes 15. It's going to go 10 to 13% over list. I'd say Montgomery County's median price points, which those are around the medians, is the second hottest part of the market after Northern Virginia.
Okay. Yeah, Northern Virginia seems...
The Virginia side of the border is just... It's insane. It's all cash offers. I mean, there's cash everywhere, but like, it seems like a higher percentage of the Virginia sales have been all cash everywhere. Certainly no contingencies. And there seems to be this ongoing problem. And I've seen probably close to a dozen agents complaining about this, in DC and in Montgomery County. Agents will set offer deadlines often Monday at noon, Tuesday at noon, very common ones. For some reason, the Virginia agents are not setting offer deadlines, and they're throwing a property on the market and they're getting 40 showings, and then they get 2 offers really quickly, and they're looking at their offer and going under contract on Saturday or Sunday without allowing the weekend's traffic to get through. I'm seeing lots of people complain about this. in
Who's complaining? The consumers, the buyers.
Well, the
agents.
Consumers are definitely complaining, but the buyers' agents, and certainly a lot of those complaints are coming more from the DC and the Maryland agents, who normally set deadlines. But I've been seeing Virginia agents complain about the same thing, like they have a scheduled showing Saturday at 6 p.m., which is not like a crazy time. And the property is going under contract at Saturday at 4 p.m. when it came on the market Thursday.
I've been seeing a lot of offers, including deadlines in them. And I think that probably stems from people setting this offer expires midnight on Sunday or midnight on Saturday, trying to get them to cancel the open houses.
People are doing that. I always say sort of a weak listing agent can be forced into a quick decision. I remember early in my career, an agent saying to me that an offer with a deadline will be as valid on Saturday as it is on Tuesday.
Yeah.
People want the house. They want the house.
Yeah. If it's their dream home, they're going to wait and they'll compete. So I tend to agree with that. I think sometimes agents want to be done with it. So they just push it through. Or, I mean, if the seller's happy with the number two, then they just go forward.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the only time, and so, right, I've not held the deadlines before, but when I do it, if we're going to take an offer early, you really got to incentivize my seller to take that offer early. If you're not coming over the top with a ridiculous offer, why won't I just wait to my deadline?
We did a deadline on an offer last week and it worked out. We went in 25. This is in Baltimore. Baltimore is very different, and I'll get to that later, but we're not seeing the same stuff in Baltimore. But
that was on that little that flipped the two level property
in
that
Laura,
you closed,
yeah,
closed yesterday. Yeah,
we just went in on Friday. We knew the opens were Saturday, Sunday. It was going to be, I think it was priced high for that neighborhood, but it would have had good traffic because the quality of finish was really nice and it was big. So we went in on Friday, all cash offer, significantly over asking price. If you accept this, cancel the open houses, we'll close in 10 days cash. It'll be quick and easy for you. And they accepted it. So, I mean, I don't think they could have, we don't have the same number of offers, the same waiving of contingencies that you have down here in Montgomery. So,
yeah, because you guys got a home inspection in on that.
We did.
And you were able to negotiate it, right?
We were because we showed up and there was some wet carpet.
Yeah.
And in the inspection report, we had thought it was a leaking pipe, like a sewer supply line. Shout out to Ralph Hawkeye Home Inspections for putting his hand straight down into what we thought at the time was sewage. It didn't end up being sewage. It was runoff from a poorly graded yard. So, yeah, they did 42 feet of waterproofing for us on that one wall. And then we show up for another walkthrough. 2 days later, there's water on the other side of the basement. They rip up everything, doing a second sump pump, another 40 feet of waterproofing. It's just a wet basement. We ended up closing. They did all the work. It was a really reputable flipper. I really like them. Usually with flippers, I have a horrible time getting them to fix anything. But they were like, we have a reputation. Our crew's already here. We'll just do it. And they did the work and they closed. So.
Yeah, I feel like there's two types of flippers in the world, the ones that care about the product that they're selling and the ones that just want to eke out every dollar. Right. We've worked with people that fall into both those categories.
Right.
As agents, I certainly prefer the ones that care about the product. Because the flippers that are trying to eke out every dollar and don't want to do anything, those are the ones that cause post-settlement lawsuits.
Well, and, we closed yesterday morning and the rain obviously has been insane the past 2 days. And I'm getting texts last night and this morning that there's water coming through another wall. So most flippers would be like, well, you bought the house.
Yeah.
Peace out. They're coming and they're going to work on it. So
awesome.
That's good. Because you're right, where the lawsuits come from. But this is an unprecedented amount of rain, but I think the lot probably has some grading issues that need to be addressed outside of the interior waterproofing. But
yeah, I mean, I guess better. It's good that we've been getting all this rain, because better that we know before settlement or right after settlement instead of 3 months from now having water from three different sides of the basement leaking in.
That's an unusual situation, but But yeah, so in Baltimore, we're seeing multiple offers. I think the key to what you had said was if it's priced right. So if you see something, the issue with Baltimore homes, they're so small. So like those little two bed, one rinky dink, you know, bath houses in Fells Point and Canton, they sit a little bit longer because the space is awkward and they're old.
Yeah.
They're really old, deferred maintenance. You got old systems, water, stuff like that. You're in a floodplain. So those sit a little bit longer. But the three bed, I think the sweet spot's three bed, three bath. Those fly off the shelf, roommate style. People love those. Those are getting multiple offers, but it seems like there's an unspoken allyship between buyer's agents to always ask for inspections. Inspections aren't getting waived, which I really like. And you experienced that.
Yeah. So I listed a property in Federal Hill, got seven offers, and all seven included inspection contingencies of some form, which I've never gotten that many offers on a property and had not had someone waive the inspection.
Right. It's like a general rule of thumb. No matter where you are, if there's more than three offers, someone's waiving some
right.
aspect of the inspection. So Baltimore, I think because of the age of the housing stock, maybe it's a little, not a little bit older. It's twice as old, basically, as lots of parts of Montgomery County. And yet the construction sometimes is better than some of the new construction we're seeing, the all brick. But there's like this, you know, it has to be very, very competitive for those inspections to get.
Yeah. Saved. And the people that are buying, right, row houses in Federal Hill and Canton, right, these are $300,000 to $600,000 homes. So you're not generally, right, a millionaire buying one of these, right? You're first time home buyer, sometimes second time home buyer. You have sort of an average upper middle class income. So a lot of times these are not the types of buyers that are in a position where they can deal with $20,000 problems post-settlement, unlike, say, Northern Virginia or Montgomery County, where right most of those buyers often have net worths in excess of $1 million. So if they have a $20,000 problem, they just deal with it.
They deal with it, right. Yeah. So,
and not that there's a lot of $20,000 problems out there, but there are some.
Yeah, and you get into that a little bit in different parts of Baltimore County, of course, in Ellicott City and Howard County, those areas, you have the same sort of stock, but.
Yeah. And then, you know, certainly certain parts of Baltimore, I'm more careful. Like for instance, if I'm within a few blocks of the water, right. I know that the water table is going to be higher. We get these, sometimes we have the old stack stone foundations. And so we get more propensity of leaking basements, the closer you get to the water. Where you live is higher up on the hill. So I would guess your basement's pretty dry.
Well, you know, I always talk about how my dad had no influence on me buying a house because, you know, dads love to come do inspections. I actually waived the inspection on my house because that was 2021 and it was different then. But I do remember looking at like a topographical map with him and him going, here's the line. I would buy north of this line.
Yeah.
You can, just because that lower Fells Point, Canton, for whatever reason, sits. The first couple blocks, have the same issues, but Fells Point's like in it, in the harbor. You know, I think I showed a house that's right off of Boston Street, right where it cuts into Luciana Street. And the floors, this is one of the first houses I ever showed. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do this for a living. This is so scary. The floors were at like a 45 degree angle. And that was the first time I had seen an HVAC like mounted to the ceiling in the basement.
So that it's not sitting on the floor
because
where it's going to get flooded.
So frequently. Yeah. And the foundation was just wild. It was stacked stone and just, there was standing water and like, after a dry spell, like it had been sitting there, it was really dank. So, but yeah, I don't have any issues, knock on wood, with my house. I never have.
Yeah, that's good. Frederick, near the canal and near the Monocacy River, is the same thing. You get these really, really old. The row house is built the same time as Baltimore, and the water table's higher. And so you get some flooding basements.
Ellicott City, like.
Well, Ellicott City can be below water,
it's
right?
It's Atlantis every few years. Yeah. You see the videos of people kayaking to get their coffees in Ellicott City. Yeah. Thankfully, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it was really interesting when that did happen. Like they have what they call the once every 100-year flood, and then like one or 2 years later, it happened again.
It is the rapture, happening in Ellicott City. But luckily that isn't too much of an issue. Well, I did show a house yesterday in Locust Point, and I always forget how low Locust Point is. I was wondering how they constructed Under Armour headquarters. They must have like some serious waterproofing going on, or have it on stilts, like no sub-basement. But the basement there, you know, they just have the trapdoor basements. Like you pull up a rug.
I hate those.
And then you pull up a trapdoor, and then it's like Silence of the Lambs down there. It's like, you don't get paid enough for that. But luckily there are a lot of people with me. So
I was showing a property in Southeast DC last week. I did a little video of it, but it was one of those, you know, types of basements too. Pulled up they didn't even have metal doors covering it. They just had a piece of plywood. So I lift up the plywood and I looking down, I was like, there's 3 feet of water in that basement.
Oh my gosh. So you have some interesting off-market properties right now.
Yeah, we got a bunch.
Want to talk about those at all?
Yeah, we've got, one of them, this one's not super interesting, single family home in Frederick, tenants willing to sign a lease extension. I think that one's 310 and the tenants willing to pay $2,100 or $2,200 to stay there. Okay. So that one's pretty cool. But then we've got 4 properties in DC that are all rent by the rooms. One's in Petworth, one's in 16th Street Heights, and 2 are in Columbia Heights. Rent by the room is the strategy where you can get the most rent or cash flow out of the property. So as an example, we've got one in Columbia Heights. I think we're pricing that at $1,050,000, and we get over $9,000 a month in rent out of that property.
Mm-hmm.
That one's right off of Sherman.
It's fully leased.
None of them are ever fully leased because someone's always in the process of moving out or moving in. So right. I think I was there last 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, and I think 2 rooms were vacant then, but I think one's already been filled since that point. But you know, basically $1,000,000 against over 9,000 in rent. That's a huge amount of cash flow. We get another one in Columbia Heights, smaller unit. This one's 799. And I think we're getting 5,500 in rent on that one. We get 16th Street Heights. This is the nicest property we've got in the portfolio. This is a huge, huge 4-level row house, $1.2 million. I think we're getting like 8,000 in rent on this, but this one it'd be great for someone who wants a house hack or owner occupied because it's got a fully contained basement rental. So a house hacker could live in the basement, collect rent on the upstairs and get $6,000 to $7,000 upstairs. Mm-hmm. And so that would pretty much cover the mortgage while you live for free in the basement. Is that all the 4 of the DC ones I went through?
Yeah, I think it's just the College Park one.
And then the College Park one's really, really cool. So it's a single family structure, but it's essentially got 5 separate fully contained units within the structure. 2 of them are full 1-bedroom units. 2 of them are studios. And then one's like a huge, huge studio, like over 1,000 square feet on that one. It's $750,000. The rent's really low right now because it's being a little mismanaged, but the rent rent's just under 6,000, but can easily be pushed to 7,000. For instance, there's one tenant in one of these units. His rent should be like 1,300, 1,400. His rent's 800 and his rent hasn't been raised in over a decade.
Oh, I see.
The current owner hasn't raised his rent and the previous owner hasn't raised that guy's rent.
Yeah, they go in brave and then they give up.
Yeah.
They couldn't do it either. I don't
think. I would do it.
I don't know. Is it an old man?
Yeah.
Of course. I couldn't do it, Russell.
I mean, you don't have to raise them all the way to market, right? But you got to start raising it at least.
But if market's what, 1,000?
1,400.
Where is it in College Park?
Right next to the metro station. For essentially a 1-bedroom apartment.
That's the big one?
It's a medium-sized one.
See, I'm already turning into like an old person because even since I've been at College Park, I'm like, 1,400 to be near the metro station? But yeah, I guess that's market. But think about that. Even a $200 increase is like devastating to someone who's been paying, what, $800 for decades?
Started at 50, started at 100. But if you never raise it, you end up $600 a month below market because you haven't raised your rent in 10 years, 12 years.
Yeah.
Um, But really, really cool property. Really hard to finance, but we have financed it before with Eastern Savings Bank.
And have you started the discussion with them about doing the same?
We've started the discussion. They want to see newer financials, plans to get the rents up to market to cover the debt service coverage ratio. But 7,000 against 700, 7,000 a month in rent against $750,000 price point, that is the highest price to rent ratio you will find in the entire metro area.
Is it separately metered?
It is not separately metered. However, all of the utilities are billed back to the tenants.
Like a Rube system.
Yep. So no utilities, not water, nothing for the landlord. Landlord's just paying his taxes, insurance, and then your debt service if you're borrowing for this. Or if you're paying cash, then you don't even have to worry about the debt service.
Does it have like an actual Rube system installed, or is he just splitting that equally between them and billing?
He just bills back. So it's five separate units. So all the gas, the water, and the electricity and the internet, he bills back 1/5 of it to each tenant on a monthly basis.
Okay. So it's like a super foplex.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's fully legal. That's the key. So this is inspected and licensed by the City of College Park, fully legal.
But not as five units.
Not as five units. It's technically a single family structure. And what makes it legal is, so all these units, or let's start with the one bedroom units. The one bedroom units have a full bedroom, a full living room, a full bathroom, and essentially a full kitchen except for a stove. Because a single family home can only have one stove. So only one of these units has a stove. And the rest have kitchenettes, I think, but they get microwaves, they get hot plates, they get everything that they need. But because there's only one stove, that's what keeps it legal with the City of College Park.
Okay.
And if you buy this, awesome. And if you love this investment, man, we get connections with the guy who actually built this property. He's got five more that he wants to unload over the next few years. You want to buy this one, we'll hook you up and buy the next one too.
So did he build this as it is, or was it a single family that he chopped up?
So this was originally a single family home that burnt to the ground. This guy bought it, rebuilt the same exterior structure, but the interior he built to what he wanted it to be.
Got to be like an Escher painting in there, just madness. Yeah. Or does it make sense?
It makes sense.
Really?
Like you walk into the, you know, you open the front door, you walk into a hallway, and there's unit one, there's unit two, two separate doors. You walk up the stairs in the hallway, there's unit three, there's unit four, and then you walk up and there's the door to unit five.
Okay.
So they have numbers on the doors.
So this is actually a pretty sick deal if you're like a cash buyer.
For a cash buyer, this is a sick deal. It's, like I said, the highest price to rent ratio anyone can get in the metro area.
Yeah, and it's College Park, which I think is the best place if you've got the money. And if
you're talking about
something,
virtually 0% vacancy right at the metro. You could rent to college students. Weirdly enough, no one that lives in this structure or the other similar ones are college students.
Well, you're right by the metro.
Right by the metro. One of the units, one of the UMD teachers or professors lives in it.
Yeah.
One of them's a retired guy. One of them's someone who's doing research at UMD, but they're not like a student. I think the other guy's a cop. And then the guy who built this one, this was his first one. Then he built ground up construction, like four more of these that are
In College Park as well.
In College Park.
Wow.
He just bought lots of vacant lots that were there and then essentially built these multifamily structures, but built them with the one stove idea to make them fully legal with the city.
Man, this guy, zoning is scared of this
guy. Yeah, because the zoning was single family, so it had to stay within there, but he got creative.
So that's why there's single occupancy, no more than two people in each room.
Well,
so is each bedroom.
So you can't get two people into each bedroom here because you have the unrelated people rule, right?
Right.
In everywhere in Maryland, you can only have five unrelated people living together in a single family structure. So since we have five separate units,
single occupancy,
just single occupancy per unit.
Okay. So if someone wanted to rent two people, you'd say no.
You'd have to say no because you're at the occupancy limit.
Got it.
But, you know, these are like 600 to 700 square foot units, right? They're perfect one bedroom units essentially for one person. And the two studios are closer to, so like the studios are like 500 square feet, the one bedrooms are like 700 square feet, and then the huge studio is like 1,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And the other buildings this guy has, they're all nearby?
They're all like
in Old Town.
They're all in Old Town. Like, they're all like essentially walking distance, but like one's like a mile away from there.
Okay. Yeah. That's a cool opportunity.
Yeah. So.
So what is he waiting to see how the sale goes to see if he wants to sell?
Well, that guy. So the one we have for sale right now, we bought from that guy. Mm-hmm. And some of my clients own that for 4 or 5, 6 years or so. He's retiring from being a landlord, selling off his portfolio. But what I'm just saying is if someone loves this investment, we get a lot more in the pipeline like that, that we can connect you with the landlord, buy the rest of them.
Interesting. Okay. I like that one.
Yeah. You want to buy it?
Sure.
All right. Let's make it happen.
I don't think they're going to like my price. Seller finance. He doesn't own it outright. So
he does own it outright.
He does?
Yep. Seller financing could be possible. We need to sell off the rest of his portfolio.
Yeah.
And if this was the last one remaining in the portfolio, he is willing to consider seller financing because it is a weird property. It mm-hmm. is hard to finance. It would require, you know, 25% down payment.
Sure.
Sort of market rate, interest rate. It would still cash flow, you know. At 25% down in a market rate interest rate, this does cash flow very nicely. We would give you a 30-year AM, but we would sell or finance. But again, that's only an option if that's the last one in his portfolio remaining because he wants to sell off these four DC ones.
He would do 30-year?
He'll do a 30-year AM.
Balloon payment. Right?
Balloon payment.
Yeah.
3 years, 5 years. You know, we'd figure it out. Interest rate would vary based on how long the balloon is.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Well, lots of good offerings now. Just got to get the investors back out. I feel like some investor clients, I don't know, things have slowed down in Baltimore. There's not multiple offers on, there's very few multifamily properties to begin with. A lot of them need a lot of work. And there's just not the multiple offers because people know they need a lot of work.
Yeah, particularly like the four units. And I think this goes for Baltimore or DC. Four-unit properties are slow. The two-unit multifamilies where we have sort of a your standard English basement, those are still very hot. Mm-hmm. And that's because the upstairs lives like a row home, right? So you're getting lots of space. It's like the basement's a plus. But when we're in the four-unit properties, like four separate one-bedroom units or four separate two-bedroom units, just the buyer pool right now is not as big as it was previously. Interest rates are part of that. Post-COVID, where people just want more space as part of that too. But the four units are slow, two units are still hot, and there's not that many three units that exist, right?
Right, right. Okay.
Anything else?
I don't think so. I think that's
right.
Good.
Anyways, keep listening. Reach out to us if you want to buy or sell in Baltimore or DC. Like Sarah said, she's expanding into Pennsylvania. We have a separate Pennsylvania brokerage that we run. So if you're in Southern Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, you know, where we service those areas now. We service the entire DMV metro area. We'll go down to Richmond. So, yep, hit us up.
Thanks for listening to the DC Real Estate Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to contact the hosts, reach out to them at info@dcrealestatepodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you access your podcasts.